Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Pan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark. She is the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy will be sharing some incredible stories of resilience that will empower you from Chicken Soup's latest book titled From Lemons to Lemonade. Good morning, Amy. Welcome back to From My Mom's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me back, Johnny.
It is fabulous to have you back. I'm really excited to have you on the air this morning. From Lemons to Lemonade is a wonderful read. The stories were very touching, with lots of heart, and of course, extremely inspirational, and no doubt another winner. So congratulations.
Thanks. It's already on the self-help bestseller list, so we're excited about that. The book's only been out a week or so, and our first results, we were number 20-something on the self-help bestseller list. So that was a really good thing for us, especially since the book came out in August, when usually people aren't paying as much attention to books.
Right. So that brings me to the number one question. How was this topic conceived?
It came about because I have increasingly seen how amazing our story contributors are. Mm-hmm. They seem to have an unlimited supply of just breathtaking stories about horrible things that have happened to them and then how they have overcome those things and still found the blessings in their lives. And I'm always blown away by how extraordinary these people are. And we've gotten into a pattern now where every fall we come out with a book that's more like a self-help book. Mm-hmm. But what's cool about it is that instead of reading one person's advice the way you normally would in a self-help book, in our self-help Chicken Soup for the Soul books, you're reading advice and inspiration from 101 different people. And so to keep up with this annual thing that I do, I thought, okay, what will my topic be this year? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, the books are always about overcoming adversity, and somehow this image of a glass of lemonade came to me, and so we decided to do From Lemons to Lemonade, and the market went crazy for it already. So we're really excited.
It's a fantastic graphic that you guys have on the cover of the book, obviously, and of course the title is just fantastic. From Lemons to Lemonade. Perfect title.
Well, what I tried to do was not just put in stories from interesting people, but make sure that the stories contained practical, usable lessons so that you could read these stories and come away with something that you could do in your own life to make a positive change, even if you don't have anything particularly bad going on in your life right now. Everyone can always tweak their attitude a little. And so the subtitle of the book is 101 Positive, Practical, and Powerful Stories About Making the Best of a Bad Situation. The idea is you should read this and walk away with something new, a different way you're going to conduct your life to improve your life.
I can assure you that no one has a perfect day or a perfect time. If they do, then they're in denial. I'm very sure of that.
I think some people, though, suffer from too many good things. Sometimes I think about how busy I am and how I'm bemoaning, how busy I am. And then I realize, well, I'm only busy because I have so many fabulous things to do. So stop complaining.
That's true. Very true. What is the most difficult about finding oneself in a bad situation? Whenever someone gets into a bad situation, what do you think is the most difficult thing for us to, I guess, to experience or to acknowledge?
I think that the hardest thing is to put it in perspective and realize you're not the only one. And I think the people who fail to manage their bad situations are the ones who think they're special and this has never happened to anyone else. Mm. And they don't try to then improve. I think the people who go in saying, okay, I know this has already happened to millions of other people throughout history. I will now deal with it just as all these other people dealt with it. Those are the people who can actually solve their problems. But I think perspective has to be the hardest thing when you're hit with one of these situations. And often we get stories from people who say they weren't moving forward, they weren't turning their lemons into lemonade because they were all woe is me, which of course is very understandable considering the things that have happened to these people. But then when that switch went from off to on and all of a sudden they had perspective, they said, oh, well, I'm not the only one. I'm just going to take care of this like all the other people who this has happened to. So I think that's the most difficult thing is perspective.
Mm-hmm. And coming to terms with it too, I think.
Yeah, you're right. Acceptance as well. Accepting that this is reality. There will be no more bargaining with fate, bargaining with God, saying if only or what if.
Yeah.
Because this is the reality, so deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think it is possible to turn any challenge around?
You know, I would. I think there have to be some challenges you can't turn around. But mm-hmm. when you read this book and you see the unbelievable things that have happened to some of these people, the losses they've had, the unbelievable, horrific injuries to their bodies and their psyches, you would read some of these stories, and if you didn't know the ending, you would say, well, yes, these are obviously situations that can't be turned around, and then these people go and turn these situations around. So I guess you could say that if you're still breathing, it's always possible to turn a situation mm-hmm. around, because these people in this book did it. I mean, I'm just in awe of these people. I can't imagine mm-hmm. going through what they did, but they did it.
And I want to remind the listeners as well. I mean, I know we got 101 stories here, but I'm very sure that you have several thousand people that contributed to this book that didn't quite make it to the 101 that was selected, correct?
That is true. I mean, we always get thousands of stories for every book, and this kind of topic in particular brings people out of the woodwork who have amazing stories. And so, yeah, I mean, we can't publish that many stories from burn victims or victims
right.
of different things, so we have to choose. And then sometimes people have amazing stories, but they're very poorly written, and someone else may have a story about mm-hmm. the same kind of hardship that's better written, so we'll take that person's story. So we do leave a lot of the great stories out, and sometimes we leave out great stories that are just as fabulous as the ones we included. I sometimes feel like the admissions officer at one of those really hard to get into colleges where, you know, I'm taking my 101, but I could have taken the next 101 and been
right.
just as happy.
Right.
It makes me feel bad, actually, that I can't take everybody. But then we get letters from people saying, you didn't take my story, but just the act of writing it and submitting it changed my
right.
life. It was
right.
so cathartic. It was so good to write it down and get it out of my system. So I think that a lot of those people had a positive experience submitting, even though they didn't make it into the final manuscript.
Right. The reason I brought it up is because I want people to understand that it's not only 101 people out there that just went through this. I mean,
oh,
you're talking about
true.
Thousands of people that went through it. So you are definitely not alone. There is a fraternity of people here that are there to help you and support you in any way they can.
When you read a story in the book about a woman who, say, overcame an abusive husband and left him, she's really the spokesperson for 100,000 other women who could have told that story. When you read about the woman who overcame her body being badly burned, she's the spokesperson for 100,000 other people whose bodies were badly burned. Absolutely. These people are spokespeople for these particular problems. And yes, they are representative of a lot of other people, including our readers, who will find their own stories in here and see how other people overcame the problems that they're currently experiencing.
Right. What is the key to getting through tough times?
I think the key is to, first of all, accept that this has happened to you. So no amount of bargaining or rationalizing will make it go away. the next key is to have perspective and realize that you're not the only one. You're not alone. Other people have overcome the same challenge. There's help out there for you from those people who are eager to help you overcome the challenge they just overcame. And then you have to look within yourself and realize how much strength you have in you. These people who have written these stories didn't know that they were superhuman before these things happened to them. They didn't know that they could survive the loss of three of their four limbs, or having half their body burned, or losing their children, or having cancer three times in a row while still in their 20s. Nobody knows they have the strength to overcome those kinds of challenges until it happens to them. And hopefully, the vast majority of our readers, hopefully 99.9% of the people who read this book, will never have to go through what these people went through. But it will put their own much smaller problems in perspective and inspire them to have a more positive attitude. And, of course, that's the final part of the recipe for success for these people, was having that positive attitude and just plowing through every challenging day and making progress.
That's very true. Are there tools and lessons that can be taken away from reading the book?
The biggest lesson for me, and it was interesting to read the book again today after, you know, not having worked on the manuscript for a couple of months, the biggest lesson for me was that anything that I'm going through is nothing compared to what these people went through. And so what I came away with was a great feeling of gratitude for my life and for what causes my problems, which are mainly being too busy doing a job that I love, visiting four children who are amazing, seeing friends who are, you know, tremendous value added to my life. What do I have to complain about?
Very interesting. I got the concept of, it reminded me the fact that I have to take ownership of myself. There's a very fine line that we are people of faith. There is a line there that we say, well, it is God's will. I've done everything I could. And so it is true that you have to have faith, but at the same time, you have to put the action within yourself, because you are in total control of yourself and the situation in many, many ways. There's certain things you have no control of, but you can certainly have control of your mind, body, and spirit. So which means when you take ownership, you can change the dynamics of the future.
That is a fabulous point. You're so right. Taking ownership, no matter what your faith is, even if you think, well, God did this, God wants me to go through this, well, that's only because God also gave you yourself and knows that you can handle it and knows that you have the tools. That's one of the things about our books, is they really point out to people, you have all the tools you need within yourself. Your brain is already fully equipped to help you handle all of these problems.
Is that the specific human conditioning that you got from the collection that you put together?
I think that's one of the things. I think that the collection really does say to you that every single person reading this book has within them the power to be as amazing as the people who wrote these 101 stories. Not a single person who wrote one of these stories imagined that they could handle this kind of situation. You know, if I turned to you and said, you're going to lose three of your limbs to flesh-eating disease, and you're going to be a happy, productive person afterwards, you'd say, no, that's not possible. But actually, you, Johnny, probably would know that you can do that. But a normal person would not know they could do that. You know, it's like when you go through something really big and then you say, wow, I could never do that again.
Yeah.
But of course you could, because you just did it. So I think that what amazed me about the human condition from reading this collection of stories is the incredible resilience, the incredible strength that we all have within us as long as we allow ourselves to access that strength.
I appreciate the fact that you're saying that I do have the mind power to, say, overcome certain things in life, but I think it's only human to realize that there is a period of grief, a period of not necessarily denial, but a fear of shock and awe that you're going through, that you're facing this challenge. But everything has its own ending, and you have to allow it to wind down and end and then have a new beginning.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about that is that you don't have to finish the grief period before getting busy and improving your life. You can do the grieving while you're doing the things that are eventually going to move you forward again. And the good thing is that the way human society is set up is you're basically just put on that path. Let's say you have a horrific injury. Well, while you're lying there in the hospital bed and going through the shock and then the acceptance and the grieving, you're already recovering because the medical professionals are making you do what you need to do. If you have a terrible loss of a family member, society puts you through the process that you already know how to do, which is the funeral and thanking people for visiting you and writing them the thank you notes and going through the whole procedure. So you're forced along, whether you're ready for it or not, so you can do the grieving while you're taking those initial steps towards recovery.
Very, very true. I have selected some compelling stories from the various sections as talking points for this morning. Can you give us a short rundown of these stories and their contributors? Because I feel like these are the stories that I could relate to very much. I know there's a barely scratching the book because the book have 101 stories and I think I may have only about 8 or 9 stories. And I don't even cover all the different segments you have in the book, but I felt like these are the ones that it's powerful for me.
Yeah, you picked a really nice one by Margaret Nava, and she is a woman who wrote about getting married and within 2 weeks of her wedding, noticing that her husband was verbally abusing her, humiliating her and self in front of her friends. And then he started not coming home. For their 10th anniversary, she cooked his favorite meal, and she was waiting for him. He never even came home from work. He claimed he was sleeping at the office. And when she finally asked him if he was having an affair, he started screaming at her, physically threatening her. And so after 12 years of this, she finally got out of the marriage, and she left with nothing. And she rented a small apartment, and she took a job as a receptionist, and she just started over. And her husband had always belittled her, including her attempts at writing while they were married. But she really felt that she was a writer. And so after she left him, she started writing again, and she really researched it and figured out what is the market looking for. Well, now she's a very successful published writer. We've published stories from her a few times in Chicken Soup for the Soul books. She has 5 books published. She has another in the works. She has numerous articles published all over the place. So she says leaving her marriage was not an easy thing to do. She says, I was psychologically beaten and physically threatened. But she says, and this is her advice to readers, when faced with verbal, mental, or physical abuse, know that you are not alone. You are not at fault. You don't have to take it. And there are things you can do to make your life better. So that was an example of one of the kinds of challenges that we cover in this book. And she's a wonderful example of somebody getting out of a marriage even though she had no money, no resources, no support system, and she made it work for her.
I like the story because I know it's about marriage and relationships, but her story covers just about everything out there when you talk about relationships, whether it's friendship, whether it's siblings. Because if you have someone keep on tearing you down and do not validate your ability and so forth, it's time to walk away because you do have the God-given greatness within you to do things.
Yeah, that's a message we actually convey a lot in our books because it's something I had to learn personally, which is that if you're in a relationship that's not good for you, you should get out of it. And that includes not only marriages but also relationships with friends.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes friends can be very passive-aggressive and actually are not supportive of you and try to drag you down. Well, those people are optional. You can move on. Now, you can't do that with family members, but you can at least change the way you deal with those family members. put it in perspective and not let their criticisms drag you down. So it's true. She did something very, very hard. Leaving a marriage is very hard. But you have to have enough self-respect to realize that you are not deserving of that kind of verbal and mental abuse.
By the way, this is from the section titled From Victim to Victory. And it's a very powerful section. I have another story here that I would like you to touch on. The title of the story is New Vision by Topi Songunuga, I believe.
Yeah, so she was 15 years old, living in Africa in the 1980s. And she was a typical 15-year-old. She was opinionated, thought she was smart, didn't suffer fools, was insolent to her parents. And her parents had always warned her about the proper way to handle bottled gas in the kitchen because she was in Africa and, you know, their kitchens are different. And so they used bottled gas, and she did something wrong, and a fire exploded in her face in the kitchen. Luckily, her younger brother, who had been in the kitchen a moment before, wasn't there anymore because she had dragged him out of the kitchen. So this girl, who had been beautiful with flawless skin, became a horribly scarred burn victim with terrible scarring on her face and on her hands. And she looked decades older than the 15-year-old she had been. And she became the object of people's stares. She didn't want to go outside. I mean, 15-year-olds are insecure enough, aren't they? And now she was horribly scarred. So she wouldn't go out for months, and then she finally agreed to go back to school and complete her education. And it was really tough for a 15-year-old to do that. I mean, people stared at her, kids teased her. And being African, she had dark skin, which then got white patches on it from the burns, and so people thought that she had tried somehow to bleach her skin white, which was very embarrassing. But she said that this near-fatal experience completely changed her for the better, and she feels she's a much better adult as a result of going through this. So it's hard for me to imagine that she's actually viewing this whole experience as a blessing, but she feels that it changed her so much that it was worth going through it because she has much better vision and perspective now, and she feels liberated because she has a new way of viewing the world.
It's a powerful story, and I chose that particular story because, well, I grew up in Malaysia, and I'm very familiar with the gas grill, the cooking stovetop, and so forth. The other side of the situation here is that people are very brutal. You'd be surprised on how kids at 15 or even younger, or some older people that look at you as being crippled, if you are not perfect, so to speak, in their mind, then they treat you differently. We talk about race discrimination. How about things like this, accident discrimination?
I know. It's hard to imagine kids could be that cruel, but I guess they can be.
So these are the things that sometimes we take things for granted. I chose that story because of the fact that I can certainly relate to that, and growing up and seeing certain people having some difficulties in their life and how it impacted their lives because society put that pressure on them. And for her to have overcome that, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is.
The next one is from the section From Rat Race to Relationships. The title is We Make Our Own Choices by Donald Quinn Dillon. I like the story very much as well.
Yeah, we have a whole chapter in the book with stories about people going from the rat race, you know, the excessive obsession with business and work, et cetera, to focusing more on relationships, because that's a really important part of Lemons to Lemonade. So many people lost their jobs or for various reasons had to reassess their relationship to work and then realize the benefit of relationships. And I love this story because this man was a doctor and he was commuting 2 hours a day. He wasn't spending enough time with his 3-year-old son and his 9-month-old son. He was also the president of his medical association. So he was extraordinarily busy. He wasn't really paying enough attention to the fact that his wife was experiencing postpartum depression, which she had also experienced after their first child's birth. And he was shocked when he ended up having to take her to the hospital and they said she needed to be admitted for several weeks. And all of a sudden, he was alone with the two kids, the toddler and the baby. And he had never spent time alone with his kids before, you know, never more than 8 hours at a time. And now he was the primary caretaker. He broke down and cried, and he said for him to cry was a really big deal because his father had bullied him, and he had always tried to not show any vulnerability. And so I guess the first benefit that happened to him from his wife being hospitalized was that he had to get in touch with his feelings and cry for the first time in front of his mother, who came to help him a little bit. And then he learned how to take care of his kids, and he had to cut back on work, and he realized that he liked staying home and spending time with his kids. And then one day he had an epiphany, and it actually happened in a conversation with the three-year-old son. His son said to him, "Daddy," and he said, "Yes, Gabriel," and his son looked at him and he said, "Daddy, we make our own choices." And I don't know what caused a three-year-old to say something so amazing, but it just changed everything for him. And all of a sudden he realized, yes, we do make our own choices. And I had been choosing to work long hours and, you know, maintaining my status as a doctor, and it was my choice, and I wasn't fully experiencing the home life and the family that I deserved. And so he said, "That's right. We make our own choices. Now I'm going to choose balance and happiness." And so his wife came out of the hospital, and he has never returned to work to the same extent that he was working then. And he said his wife is doing so much better now. She's the happiest he's ever seen her, and the boys are so confident and healthy and loving, and every day he thinks about what his little three-year-old son said to him, was that we make our own choices.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good eye-opener and a little lighter story, because we mix in the slightly lighter problem stories, you know, with the incredibly bad stories, because this is more accessible, because somebody says, oh, okay, well,
yeah,
I'm not going to be burned, I'm not going to have all these horrible things happen
yeah.
to me, but yeah, I could cut back on work and spend more time with my kids. And this was a little bit of an eye-opener that I think could help thousands of people who read the book.
Definitely. And also, the other side of this equation is the kids. Now they are able to see their parents at work in the family unit. And no telling what that will transpire for them in years to come when you talk about relationships.
That's true. He was probably doing a good thing for his grandchildren also, because now he's raising those two boys and they're seeing a father who's much more involved, a happy mother. They're seeing the example of a happy marriage, a father who's achieved the right balance between work and home.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was a very positive change for the whole family, and it will have consequences for generations.
That's correct. When you choose love and do everything you can to pursue that part of the equation. So that's why I chose that story. And then the next section is from adversity to acceptance. This is just a wonderful, wonderful story. Breaking Bald by Alicia Bertin.
Yeah, I love Breaking Bald, because I know she's making a reference to Breaking Bad, the TV show. but Alicia Bertin, you can see her videos on YouTube. She is a bald fashion model. And this poor girl, when she was only in her early 20s, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which is usually a killer, but she has survived it 3 times now. But what she's lost is the beautiful long hair that she had. So when she was first diagnosed, like many women, one of the first things she thought about was that she was going to lose her hair, which happened almost immediately. And here's what she did. She went to the place where they sell the wigs, and she said, Nope. And she walked right out the door with her bald head. And then she walked right back inside and put some sunscreen on her bald head. And then she walked right back out again. And she has been proudly flaunting her bald head. And she had done some modeling as a child, but being only 5'2", she didn't really have a career in front of her as a fashion model. But now with her bald head, she's a model because she has something unique to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she modeled dresses for Betsy Johnson. She's been modeling for all these really famous designers. And here's this girl who's bald and scarred and going through chemo and radiation and having recurrences of cancer, and yet being a successful fashion model. So I think that she's a fabulous example for everyone, and especially for young people going through cancer. What a great model for them. And I love the fact that you can go on YouTube and see her proudly strutting around wearing these clothes with her bald head.
This story tells me there's tremendous amount of confidence that one needs to have. And we have it within us. Do we tap into it? That's the question that we need to ask ourselves.
And, you know, this is in that chapter that's called From Adversity to Acceptance. And mm-hmm. we've talked about acceptance before. It seems to be one of the key ingredients that you need for turning lemons into lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
And the next story that you asked me to talk about is in that same chapter, and mm-hmm. it's another example of somebody taking the problem. It was baldness for Alicia Bertin, and now for Jody Fuller, it's stuttering, and instead of trying to hide the problem, Jody decided to flaunt his stuttering. So just as Alicia flaunted her baldness, Jody, who was struggling with the stuttering in school, he had an epiphany one day, and he said, instead of hiding and hoping the teacher doesn't call on me to read, I'm just going to hold my hand up and volunteer at every opportunity. And so he completely confronted his stuttering. He has an older brother whose stuttering miraculously went away when he was 12, but Jody's stuttering never went away. So now he's just known for stuttering, and he's a soldier. He's had 3 tours of duty in Iraq. Now he's a captain in the Alabama National Guard. He's a stand-up comedian. He's an inspirational speaker. And he has served as a role model for other people who have stuttering or other speech disorders, and many of them have written to him and said that they decided to join the military because of his example. So a lot mm-hmm. of wonderful kids who were afraid to join the military because of a speech disorder changed their minds because of Jody Fuller and are now serving our country. So that's a really wonderful thing that he mm-hmm. did. We love this guy. We actually asked him to write a story about his stuttering for a positive thinking book that we have coming out for kids this fall, because we figured he was a great role model for the kids who would read our book who are dealing with stuttering mm-hmm. or other speech mm-hmm. disorders.
That's fantastic. And again, the reason I chose him, because stuttering is something that the moment you open your mouth, that's it. All your stocks just went down. I mean, people look at it that way because you
it's
can't
true.
Talk straight. Yeah, you know,
he
and it's so sad.
He just faces it right on. He just says, yeah. I'm going to stutter, so accept it. And then it becomes a non-issue.
These are the things that are faced by people around the world. I mean, I came from Malaysia, and I can assure you the things that you talked about in this book, they are occurrences that are just not happening in the United States alone. These are stuff that we as human beings, we encounter this every day worldwide.
That's true. I think that something like 1% of men have a stuttering problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a worldwide problem. And, of course, somebody reading Jody's story who has some other kind of problem that caused them to get teased in school or whatever, it doesn't have to be stuttering, I think that they'll find it very interesting that now
yeah.
he's a soldier and so confident and successful.
Right. Very true. The next section is from Problems to Purpose. And I love the story, Dancing with Destiny by Christopher Charles McDaniel.
So Christopher Charles McDaniel was a tough kid in Harlem in New York. raised by a mother who was a drug addict. His father was in jail. He was surrounded by drugs and gangs and violence, and he was a tough kid because that's how he felt. He had to survive. He wasn't doing well in school. And then one day, he went on a school field trip to see the dance theater of Harlem, and it changed everything for him. He went to the principal of his school, and he said, if I behave and I pull my grades up, would you arrange an audition for me with the dance theater of Harlem? And he got in with a full scholarship, danced with the dance theater of Harlem for years, and now is a principal dancer with the Los Angeles Ballet. He loves going out and dancing for disadvantaged youth and turning other kids around. So I love that story because this is a guy who came from the most difficult kind of neighborhood. And it's in this chapter called From Problem to Purpose, because now his purpose is not only dancing because he loves it and because it's his job, but his real purpose is to turn around other kids from the ghetto and help them. And if he can just save a few kids, I'm sure he'll feel like he's really accomplished something.
Well, he epitomized the fact that the environment does not control your destiny. You do.
That's true. And he had it within him. And my gosh, whoever would have thought that he could be a principal dancer, this rough kid from the gangs in Harlem, turns out to be a fabulous, you know, ballet dancer.
And that's why he's very successful, because he took ownership, took charge of himself. He doesn't allow his parents to affect him and the surroundings that he grew up in.
That's right.
The next one is From Bleak to Blessings. This is a wonderful story, very touching story, but it's a beautiful story. Hope from Ashes by Susan Luckley.
Yeah, I'm amazed how many people write to us about being burned. I mean, I didn't realize it was so prevalent. But this woman, she writes in her story that she kept having this horrible dream in which she was screaming, help me, save my family. And there was this roaring inferno around her. And she saw her skin melting off her arms and legs. And then she kept saying in this dream, when will I wake up? When will I wake up? And then she realized it wasn't a dream and it had really happened. And she was in the hospital and her husband was severely burned. Also, her husband lost the left side of his face. He lost his eyesight. He lost four fingers on his left hand. Her daughter was severely injured but not burned. And this woman was severely burned and had her backbone shattered. But eventually, she recovered. I mean, it took years. And she had a former burn patient come to see her in the hospital. And he didn't look like a monster to her, which is what she was afraid she would look like from all the scarring. And so he helped her get through it. And now, after years of recovery, she's going back and visiting other burn survivors in the hospital and encouraging them. And she says, and I'm quoting now, today my life is fuller than I could ever imagine. My husband, daughter, and I are healed. I am grateful for every part of the changes it took to make me the woman I am. And then she says, without this experience, I would not have met some of the greatest and bravest overcomers on this earth. That is so humble of her. She's talking about how she gets to meet all these great people who have overcome challenges. She completely forgets that she's one of them.
And she speaks for all of them in many ways, because sometimes these are people that are forgotten from societies in so many ways.
Yeah, I don't think about all these people who are in hospitals recovering from burns. It never even occurs to me, but it seems to be a widespread problem.
And the next one is From Apprehension to Appreciation. This is a wonderful, wonderful story. From Worker to Owner by Caroline Seeley.
So this is back on the lighter side of bad things that can happen to you, because once you read this book, you realize that losing your job is actually on the lighter side of bad things that could happen to you. So this woman worked at an apple orchard and loved her job, and then the orchard owner decided to sell the orchard, which we all know is a common problem now in the agriculture industry that people have to sell for various reasons. And so she's going to lose her job, and she doesn't know what she's going to do. And then it turns out that the new owners of the orchard don't want to run the roadside stand that they had always run at this orchard. And so she gets the opportunity to run a stand instead using the cider from the orchard. And she and this other woman start the stand, and it ends up becoming a huge business for them where they also sell baked goods. They have a catering business. And so now she went from being just a worker in the apple orchard, a worker who had lost her job, to now owning a thriving small business. Mm-hmm. And so that was a great example of how when everything looks terrible, you know, hope can be just around the corner.
Right. And, of course, she puts in the effort as well, and I'm sure her attitude has got a lot to do with it, because she was actually chosen by the owner that sold his business.
Yeah, you know, she was one of the few workers who was chosen to stay through all of the many months of shutting down the orchard and transferring it to the new owners. So she must have had a really wonderful, positive attitude all the way through, even though she knew she was losing her job. She kept working just as hard as ever, showing her value. And you're right, that is why she was chosen to be given this little sliver of the business that was going to be able to survive on its own after the new owner took over the orchard.
Yeah, it's how you present yourself every day at work that makes a difference, because people are watching.
That's true. So the last story you asked me to look at is in this section that I put at the end of the book, which is really a section about people using their faith, mainly Christian faith, to help them get through problems. And I loved this story that you loved also, Two Sides of the Coin, because anybody could use this story, whether they're in the same religion as this writer or not, because she went to see a therapist after her husband was deployed to Afghanistan, and she was really having a hard time dealing with two little kids, plus going to grad school to get her graduate degree. And her therapist did something really simple. Her therapist gave her a coin, and one side of the coin said fear, and the other side said faith. And the therapist said, every time you feel afraid or overwhelmed, flip the coin from the fear side to the faith side and focus on the faith. Well, I mean, anybody can do that, right? Mm-hmm. And it worked for her, because it really is a matter of mind over matter. And so she ended up surviving her husband's deployment really well and learning how to always focus on her faith rather than her fear.
Mm-hmm. The simplicity of the story, and I say this respectfully in the sense that there are two equal but separate forces that govern all our decision-making process and how we feel about things or how we analyze things in life. Love or fear? And in this case, love is faith and fear is fear. And when you allow faith and love to exceed your fear, you will experience harmony in everything you do.
I think you're right. The whole book is an example of that.
And that's why I chose that to be the last one. We got to get that story in there. Is there any special story that moved you?
Yeah, there's a really special woman who keeps sending us stories. Her name is Cindy Charlton. And I actually put
her
story.
Yes.
I put her story first in
number
the book.
Number one, so, I believe, yes.
Yeah, so Cindy had one of those flesh-eating diseases, you know, where you get an awful bacteria in you that the doctors can't stop with any antibiotic, and it eats away at your limbs. And Cindy lost both her legs and one of her arms. So she has one arm left of her four limbs. So we first got to know Cindy because she wrote a story for us one time about her husband going through treatment for cancer. And the story was about taking care of her husband. And then she kind of just mentions two-thirds of the way through the story how she has one arm and doesn't have the other arm and doesn't have legs. But it's just like, it's the same as if I said I have blue eyes. It was so nonchalant. And we had to stop and say, what? What? Oh, that's just a, by the way, you're a triple amputee? And this woman is unbelievable. So this story that she put in this book is about how she was trying to get to her son's class party one day, because she was the homeroom mom for his fifth grade class, and one of her artificial feet broke, and she fell down in the driveway. And it just talks about the first couple of hours of her day where she's driving around in the car with her broken prosthetic limb lying on the seat next to her. She can't get out of the car because she only has one prosthetic leg to hop on. And so she keeps pulling up next to people and showing them the leg lying on the seat next to her, saying, "Could you please help me?" And so she gets somebody to pump gas at the gas station for her. She gets somebody to carry bags in from the car, and then she finally stops by the place where they make the prosthetic legs, and the guy comes out to the car and grabs her leg and takes it inside and fixes the foot. But she recounts all of this the way we would recount, like, "I had a cold, but I still did my errands." You know, she's unbelievable, this woman. And after she had the flesh-eating disease and lost the three limbs, then her husband died from cancer, too. But she is the sunniest, most upbeat person. And so her stories always inspire me, because I just can't imagine how positive this woman really is. She's like the most positive person in the world.
She chose to be happy. I read her story, and it's very lighthearted in so many ways, because the way she writes things, "Oh, well, by the way, this is life, you know, we do it this way, and that's it, life goes on."
Yeah.
And that in itself, it's so energizing. What do you admire most about the rest of the contributors?
I think I admire the way they matter-of-factly discuss these terrible things that happened to them. Mm-hmm. And then matter-of-factly discuss what they did to overcome these challenges. And I say matter-of-factly because they just say what they did, but they don't seem to understand anymore how incredibly moving it is that they were able to accomplish these changes in their lives, and how blown away we are as readers. You know, "Oh, you overcame burns over half your body and you're fine now." And they just matter-of-factly say it, where we're saying, "Oh my gosh, I can't imagine ever going through that." These people are unbelievably strong. But what's really cool about it is that they were ordinary people before this happened.
Yeah.
And I guess it tells us that we're all capable of doing the same thing if we're confronted with these same kinds of challenges.
Mm-hmm. Very true. It's like they are on the other side of the sound barrier, and we are on this side.
Yeah.
And we're constantly struggling.
Yeah, but I guess we all could do this. So
when
we're confronted with huge challenges, we have to remember, hey, these people did it. Look inside yourself. You've got the same strength inside you, the same abilities to do the same thing. So maybe the title "From Lemons to Lemonade" is a little light for some of these people. Maybe it should be "From Unbelievable, Insurmountable Challenges to Getting on with Life Incredibly Successfully."
I mean, that's right.
The stories these people had were a lot worse than lemons.
Yeah.
And their successes were much more powerful than lemonade. I mean, the book is really, really powerful. It's really making my day, actually, just to talk about it again.
Well, that comes back to the question about human conditioning. In reading the book, you can see the resiliency that each individual start to have when they take ownership of the situation and not giving up in living and in everything that they do. So much starts from within us, and then from within us, we generate the enthusiasm from the people that are all around us, and that makes a big difference. That leads me to bringing up this special thing that I want to know. I mean, it's been a couple of months since we talked. I know a lot of things have been happening with Chicken Soup. I read a lot of things going on out there in the news and everything else. So since I got you here on the air with us, so Amy, as the publisher and editor-in-chief of Chicken Soup, tell us what's coming up. I mean, I know you guys have a lot of things, so tell us what's coming up.
Well, we just had an incredibly exciting summer because we made some major company-changing announcements. I mean, everyone knows us for our books, and that, of course, is our primary occupation, is creating these inspirational books, collecting all of these stories. But now these stories are leading us in new directions. And one direction is making a major motion picture based on stories in our books. After all, we have 20 years of books to draw stories from. So we're making a major motion picture with a company called Alcon, which was the same studio that brought us The Blind Side, which was such a wonderful movie. And the movie will be distributed by Warner Brothers. Now, you know, it takes a while to make a movie, so it's going to take another year, a year and a half before this movie hits the big screen. But we're very excited about a major motion picture that will be called Chicken Soup for the Soul. We also, last month, in addition to announcing the movie, we started rolling out our new line of comfort food. Our pasta sauces are now on sale at H-E-B, which is a wonderful grocery chain in Texas.
That's
and
right. Hey.
Yeah, Texas. Texas was first. Thank you, Texas.
Yep.
And now our soups are on sale in stores all over the Eastern Seaboard at Giant, and at Martin's, and at Stop and Shop, which is our local store up here in Connecticut. And we have, in addition to pasta sauces and soups, we're rolling out gravies. We're rolling out different broths, including like Thai-flavored broth and all these cool flavors of broths. And we have hundreds of different comfort foods coming out over the next couple of years. So that's really exciting. And I've been living on those foods because I've been really busy and haven't been able to cook at all. So I've been eating our pasta sauces and eating our soups, which has been great. They're really delicious. Last night I had the Thai-style chicken soup for dinner. It was so good. Curry
it sounds
and coconut
delicious.
Milk in it. It was really good.
Yes.
We're also redesigning our dog and cat food line, and that's very successful. And we're redesigning our website. So we have a lot going on at Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. We're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with all our listeners this morning?
Yeah, I have a few key things that I have drawn from our books. And one of my tips is that you should always pursue one of your passions, even if you don't love your job and your job is just something you use to pay the bills. Make sure you pursue a passion outside of your job, something that you've always loved to do. Maybe think back to what you loved to do when you were 10 years old and make sure you do that now. For me, it was always reading. I'm lucky I get to do that in my job, but if I had some boring job that I didn't like, I'd make sure to be pursuing my passion of reading on the side. Another tip is to do something that has meaning for you. A lot of people do that through volunteer work. Mm-hmm. They find that volunteer work gives their life meaning and often completely changes their lives for them, because doing good for others is incredibly good for you. And then a third ingredient in my recipe for living is counting my blessings, which I do constantly. I'm always saying in my head, well, it's not cancer, and I'm sure if I ever get cancer, then I'll say in my head, well, at least I could pay my bills. But I will always be counting my blessings. And people who do count their blessings have been scientifically proven to have much healthier lives. They're much more productive. They get along better with other people. Everyone has blessings. You can write one down every day. Keep a gratitude journal. It's amazing how well that works. A fourth ingredient for having a successful, happy life is to smile at everyone. No matter how I feel when I walk into work in the morning, I smile at everyone, even if I feel the weight of the world on my shoulders. If you smile at everyone, it's like a boomerang. It comes right back to you. So I find that smiling at everyone really changes my life, and we have countless stories from people who recount the same experience, how smiling did boomerang right back and give them better lives. And then another ingredient for successful living for me is having that perspective, having that long-term view, realizing that you're not alone, that whatever is happening to you, good or bad, is happening to millions of other people at the same time, and also realizing that what really matters is your legacy, what you're leaving. It's not your job necessarily. It's probably more your family, your friends, your children. That's what you're leaving behind. So make sure you pay attention to your legacy. Another ingredient for success in a happy life is learning. Make sure you always learn. Watch a documentary. Read a nonfiction book. Go for a walk and learn the names of the trees. But do something to keep learning. Keep your brain exercised. And then finally, take time for yourself. Sit in the car for an extra 2 minutes and listen to the end of the song when you pull into the garage. But take that me time, because you need that no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on. You need to recharge your batteries with that me time, even if it's only 10 minutes a day. So that's what I do.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I mean, that's wonderful recipe for living life. One last question. How has Chicken Soup for the Soul changed you personally?
I think it's made me calmer. I think that reading all of these stories from all of these amazing people who go through so much it's a way of pushing that perspective button in my brain every hour. You can't ever feel sorry for yourself if you're working on these books, because reading these stories makes you always realize how blessed you are and how lucky you are to not have the problems that these people have. So I think it's changed my life because it's just made me a better person. I think that being surrounded by Chicken Soup for the Soul stories all day long and working on them, it can't help but make you a better person, a happier person, a more grounded person.
That's amazing. I mean, I just can sense that passion, that enthusiasm in your voice. You're excited about the project, and I'm sure that is the fuel that gets you going every day.
Yeah, we get letters. We get so many letters from people thanking us and telling us how these stories change their lives. So I know that what we're doing is really making a difference. So it's not just a job. It's not just our family business. This is going to sound really hokey, but it's a calling also, because we know how much we're helping people. Just like your radio show is a calling. It's a business, but you're also doing it to help people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Amy, thank you so much for being on the air with me this morning. It's fabulous. It's always a pleasure having you on the air with me. And thank you for the great recipes for living that you shared with us just now, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me next Tuesday. My guest will be James Kaufman. He is a best-selling and an award-winning author. James will be sharing insights on why relationships matter and how we can benefit from true connections. Thank you for being with us this morning. For additional information, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Amy, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Bye-bye.